This evening's topic for the talk is a very deep and refined one. If I remember correctly, the topic is skills in attaining jhana. So here we are talking about those very deep and profound stages of meditation called the jhanas, and especially the ways into those jhanas. I will also include in this talk what to do after those jhana experiences, so that I will give a full teaching around the subject of jhanas. Even though those jhanas are quite difficult to attain, one does need to do a lot of meditation to gain them. It does happen that sometimes ordinary people, lay people who are meditating on a retreat or even at home, sometimes either by chance or just because of all the conditions come together, sometimes they do get close and sometimes even into those jhanas. And because of that, even though you may feel that you are a long way away from these very exalted states, I still feel it's a good idea to give these instructions to you so that when you come close at some future time, that you will remember what to do and then make a lot of benefit out of these wonderful states of mind. These jhana experiences are states of letting go. Sometimes people call them states of concentration, but that doesn't really do justice to their reality. These are states of letting go. Meditation is a process of letting go. The more you let go, the more deep in meditation you go. If you let go of a lot, you go very, very deep indeed into very peaceful, blissful states of mind. To get into a jhana, you have to let go of a great deal indeed. You have to let go of your body and let go of all the senses, the five senses, to the point that you can neither feel anything in the body. You cannot feel any sensations of heat, cold, or touch, or anything whatsoever. Nor can you hear any sounds. Even if there was an explosion outside, in jhana you would not hear it. Your mind will be inaccessible to the five senses. Also, in such a state, the mind is on what you might call automatic pilot, where you cannot give directions, where you cannot choose, but you cannot decide to do one thing or another. In these jhana states, you've also let go of the doer, otherwise known as choice, otherwise known as will. When you enter one of these states, you enter by your free choice, but when you're in there, you just can't come out until the jhana state just fades away by itself. This is why sometimes if you've got a very important appointment, it's best not to get into jhana, because you won't be able to get out of jhana for your appointment. You're stuck in there having a lovely time. But to actually attain these jhanas, to get into them, there is a very well known process, like stages of letting go. Ways in which you come very close and closer and closer, then you enter these stages. I've talked about many of those initial stages to the retreatants during this 4-day retreat, and they are also explained in the little book which is published here, The Basic Method of Meditation. And so I'm going to skip over some of the basic stages and then go on to the important stages where jhanas are accessed. I'm going to begin at what I call the stage of full awareness of the beautiful breath. This is where you're going to access the jhanas through the vehicle of the breath. You can access jhanas through many other meditation objects, not just through the breath. Even those people doing the traditional Vipassana meditation can sometimes get close enough, they can very easily flip over into this process which leads to jhana and gain those jhanas. Even if you're doing contemplation of the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, it is not that hard once you get a lot of peace and joy in the mind, again, to flip over into this well-trodden route which leads to jhanas. So because of this, I want to start at the stage of the beautiful breath. It is a stage where the mind has started to calm down to the point where it has continuous awareness of its meditation object. That stage, you put up my finger. This is a stage like I'm watching my finger as it moves from the left to the right with no interruption in my attention. As it goes from the right to the left, I'm watching my finger with no interruption at all to my attention. As I'm watching my finger going from left to right, my attention is so great that I can't see any one of you in the room. In this simile, the finger stands for the breath, my attention stands for mindfulness. The beginning stage from where you can get into jhana is a stage where you have continual full awareness of your meditation object. You're aware of the breath and nothing else. And that awareness is continuous without interruptions. If you're practicing metta meditation, you can start at continuous full awareness of the feeling of metta, where you're just aware of metta and nothing else. The point here about the beautiful breath is the only way that you can watch something like the breath fully and continually for so long is when the breath appears to you as beautiful. You cannot hold the mind through force on the breath for such a long time. After a while, the breath will escape from you because that's its nature. The only way you can sustain your attention on the breath fully, continuously, for such a long time is when the breath appears to the mind as a very lovely and beautiful object. In just the same way, if you are watching your favorite program on the television, even if the telephone rings, it cannot take you away from your movie. Even though your wife says there's something to eat, you tell her to, we'll put it in the microwave later after the movie is finished. Because of enjoyment, you do not need effort. The effort is supplied by the enjoyment of the breath. Once you have reached that stage in meditation, the meditation does appear to you as effortless meditation. You can sit there and sometimes you think you can sit there for a long, long time because you no longer have to try. The mind stays with the breath because it enjoys it. From that stage, very often the other stages happen automatically. If you truly are at peace with the breath, it's the nature of the breath to calm down more and more. Basically, it is because when you are at peace, the body does not need much oxygen. It doesn't need so much breath. So the breath gets less. When the breath gets less, the body is even more peaceful, so you need even less oxygen. So there's a natural process of the breath getting softer and softer, lighter and lighter. This is calming down the beautiful breath until it becomes so refined, so soft, it's as if the breath is hardly there at all. Meditators need to be careful here. If they go too fast, the breath will tend to disappear and they are lost. They don't know what to do. It is because they've allowed the breath to calm down far too quickly. If that happens, just ask yourself, am I breathing in or breathing out? And go back to the breath as soon as you can. And next time, Don't let it go so quiet, so fast. You should always keep your attention on the breath. Always be aware of that beautiful breath when it starts getting peaceful. What usually happens next is what we call the nimitta flashing into the mind. The nimitta is a reflection of the mind itself, usually appearing to people as a bright light in the mind, as a beautiful light that can appear in any color, in any shape. Sometimes it can be very complex and complicated, like the vision of a person or a scene in the city or the countryside. Such complex nimittas are not useful and should be discarded as soon as you can, because they cannot be used as vehicles into deeper meditation. They are distractions. Also, such complex nimittas should not be believed in. They are constructions of the mind. They are not signs of the future. So do not believe in them or take them to be anything that they're not. They're like dreams and imaginations. That's all. What is happening is the mind is starting to become powerful, more powerful than the five senses, and is starting to dominate the consciousness. Imagine my two hands here. This hand, my right hand, represents the five senses. My left hand represents the mind. In normal consciousness, the five senses are so dominant because they're so coarser, it's hard to actually even experience the mind consciousness. As you calm down the five senses, they calm down more and more until it gets to the stage. The five senses are calming down and the mind is getting stronger. At this stage, there is almost a balance between the five senses and the mind. When the mind suddenly gets stronger, you get the nimitta coming up, or a scene, an imagination of the mind. This is what we call a pure mind object. It has nothing to do with the sensory world. Sometimes, because they are pretty even, sometimes the senses come up again and it flashes off and you go back to the feeling of the breath or even sounds outside. Because the mind is starting to become strong, it can create all sorts of things. A friend of mine, who I grew up with, had two young children, two girls. One of those girls, when she was in primary school, I think the first grade at primary school in England, was asked by the teacher a very simple question. All the class was asked the same question, and the question was, what is the biggest thing in the world? One of the children said, my daddy. Another child said, an elephant, because they'd been to the zoo. Another child said, the biggest thing in the world is a mountain. My friend's daughter said, the biggest thing in the world is the human eye, E-Y-E. And the teacher was surprised and asked the child, what do you mean, the biggest thing in the world is the human eye? And this little six-year-old girl said, well, my eye can see her daddy, it can see an elephant, it can see a mountain, and so much more. Therefore, the human eye must be the biggest thing in the world. Sometimes so much wisdom comes out of the mouths of children. I told my friend, that's almost correct. There is something which is even bigger than the human eye, and that's the human mind. Because the human mind can see everything the eye sees, and it can imagine so much more. It can imagine things which you can never see. That's how huge the human mind is. It is the biggest thing in the whole universe. Because the human mind can see, or rather imagine what you can see with your eyes, it can also imagine things you can never see. Because it's so huge at this particular stage, it can create anything. If it creates complex things, you should let them go as soon as possible. They are no use to you, and they can be very deceptive. If there is any danger in meditation at all, and there aren't really dangers, it's just spending too much time in these complex mental images thrown up at this stage. Instead of having complex images, you should wait until a nimitta, this vision in the mind, arises, which is pure and simple. Usually a bright light of one color of a very simple shape. Not like a snowflake, which is far too complex, but more like the moon or a star in the sky, which is far more simple, of a simple color, of a simple shape. Usually what happens is that nimitta arises and then flashes away again, flashes off again and disappears and leaves you with the breath. What you need to do is to wait with the breath until that nimitta flashes up so bright and so pure that you cannot resist it, and you allow the attention to go towards that nimitta. That nimitta is the first sign of the mind. For those who know meditation very deeply, they will compare that nimitta to looking in a mirror at your own face. You are actually, it's the mind looking at the mind. It's the reflection of the mind. Sometimes people wonder, is that nimitta, should it be this color or that color? Should it be white, blue, yellow or orange? And why is it that people get different colors when they see the nimitta? The point being here is this is not a light at all. The sense of sight has been turned off a long time ago. What this is a mental object, an object of the mind, but you cannot understand it in any other language than the language of your ordinary experience. What the mind does is look through its category, its files of old experiences, for something which is close to this pure mental experience. The closest thing which you can have is probably a beautiful light. That's the closest experience, and that's how you describe it. In the same way, if you've seen something strange and someone asks you what you've seen, you'll say, well, it was something like this or something like that. Our language is comparisons. That's how we make sense of the world. What you are doing is you're adding many details onto this experience. The experience of a nimitta is exactly the same for all people. However, people add so many details. So to one person it's yellow, to another person it's white, to another person it's green, to another person it's black. But in truth, it's exactly the same. So you don't need to be concerned of its shape or color. What is important is that that image in the mind is stable and beautiful, if you wish to take it into jhanas. If that light or that image appears in the mind, if it's beautiful and attractive, it will draw your attention. In the same way, if you see an object of beauty as you walk along the street, you will pause and gaze because that beauty will draw the mind to it. In the same way that when a nimitta arises in the mind, it will capture the attention and keep it there a while. The way to develop the nimittas in meditation is to let go and allow the process to happen. This is a natural process, a well-worn path, and you do not need to do anything at all. However, there are two things to be careful of, two enemies to further progress in your meditation, two obstacles to going fully into the jhana. One of those obstacles is fear, the other obstacle is excitement. These are common experiences which happen to all meditators. Sometimes when you start to experience something powerful in the mind, something beautiful and strong, you feel fear. In the same way that many children, when they're taken to the swimming pool or the river to learn how to swim, they are afraid of that water. And sometimes they scream and struggle, they don't want to get in. Because it's unknown, because it's strange, because it's something they're not used to, fear comes up. In the very same way, when you experience a nimitta, it sometimes is so powerful, so strong and beautiful, that you get very afraid. The way to overcome that fear is to have confidence and trust in the teachings of the Buddha. And the teachings of those monks and other teachers who you can trust, who've been there before and say, like a parent teaching a child about water, "There's nothing to fear, it's perfectly safe. Look at me, I jump in." You can do the same. But sometimes a little child just puts in one toe and then takes it out quickly, just in case. And then maybe a few toes and then takes it out. Then maybe a foot and takes it out. And then maybe a whole leg and takes it out. And realizing it's safe and very pleasant, then the child jumps in. And once the child has jumped in and realized that water is fun, daddy can't get it out again. The child is having fun and playing in there, and daddy says it's time to go home. "No, sorry, I'm having fun." This is what happens when you get into jhanas. That fear is overcome either by having confidence that this is not dangerous at all, or by just testing it out little by little. The other obstacle is excitement, especially those who've been meditating a long time, who have heard about jhana and want to get into it desperately. Especially as there's only one more day of the retreat left. So as soon as the nimitta comes up, they think, "Wow, this is it," and immediately it goes. That excitement is disturbing your mind. Remember that nimitta is a reflection of your mind. If your mind gets excited, so does the nimitta, and it goes completely away. It takes a lot of training and preparation that when a nimitta comes up, you're going to keep still. You're going to keep cool and not get excited at all. If you tell yourself that and train yourself in that way, when the nimitta comes, you'll be peaceful and you'll be still and you'll be completely passive. Completely passive is very important at this stage in the meditation, because if you try and do something, again, you're agitating the mind, the reflection of the mind also gets agitated. Remember, if you're looking in the mirror, if you move, so does the object in the mirror. You have to keep all this very, very still. If you can keep still, if you cannot be excited and not get afraid, you can rest with that nimitta. That nimitta can be in your mind, or rather you're aware of that nimitta, watching it unmoving for quite a long time. Just aware, like you are watching the moon in the sky, the full moon on a very clear night. The reason why you can hold that nimitta all that long is not because of you trying, but because of you letting go. That nimitta is by its nature very beautiful. You do not need to try. Just let go. The mind will want to stay there by itself. Don't do anything at this stage. The biggest mistake when you get into deep meditation is to think, "What do I do next?" You've been doing all the right things. You've done all the work. Relax and let go, and everything will happen according to its nature. Don't do anything. Don't try and control. If you do, you'll mess it all up. so as you're watching that nimitta, what usually happens is the mind notices in the center of that nimitta, it's the most beautiful part. I've given this instruction to several meditators. When a nimitta comes up, look in its center. If it's a white nimitta, the very center is the most beautiful and vivid white. If it's blue, if it's green, even the black nimitta came up to one of my students in Perth. They didn't recognize it at first because they were looking for something white. And it was black. But it was very beautiful. They described it to me as the most beautiful, vivid, vibrant black they'd ever seen in their life. Not just the ordinary black, not a negative black, but a very positive, thrilling black. That's a nimitta. So what you should do is look to the center of that mental sign. If you look to the center, there's the most beautiful part. And it's so attractive, it's like a magnet to the mind. It pulls the attention in, and you have no choice. You feel yourself going in to a beautiful space. Or sometimes you feel that space coming towards you and enveloping you. This is precisely the same experience viewed from two different angles. Either you going into the nimitta or the nimitta going around you. In either way, you go into a great state of bliss. Some meditators have said it's like a doorway in the center of the nimitta, a hole in which this tremendous power and bliss, the greatest pleasure you've ever known. This is mental pleasure. At this point, again, fear can come up, or excitement. Wow, at last. And that doorway is closed, and you go all the way out again. Ah, shucks, so close, but you missed it. Keep cool. Do nothing. Have trust and confidence. For those people who have trouble at this stage, you can actually deliberately say, I have confidence in the nimitta. I have confidence in the mind. In the very same way that if you have a chauffeur or a driver taking you somewhere in Kuala Lumpur, if you have full confidence that they know the way and they are a good driver, you can relax in the back seat, read a book, or look out the window, or even go to sleep, because you know the driver is going to get you to where you want to. You have full confidence in the driver that you can really let go. People who have no confidence in their chauffeur, tell them, go this way, go that way, hurry up, slow down. This is not the best way. I know the best way. Go here, go there. That means you have no trust in your chauffeur. Here the chauffeur is your mind itself, which you'll find is very different than you. That which you take to be you, the doer, will. So you have confidence in that mind, in that process. As you see this beautiful ball of light, you can even say, I give you all my confidence. And then shut up. Then be quiet. Don't say any more. If you do that, the beautiful center of the nimitta will draw the mind in, and you'll go into a beautiful state of bliss. At each of these stages, which I've just been describing, it's not the time to say, what is this? It's not the time to take any notes. It's not the time to try and describe this thing to yourself. All those descriptions, the taking notes and assessments, you can leave to the end of the meditation. Because any word, any movement of the mind will disturb the whole process. You have to be that silent, you can't even ask, what is this? Or is this jhana? If you do ask, is this jhana? The answer is, no.